From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The legal team representing Georgia's Democratic gubernatorial candidate, Stacey Abrams, held a press conference on Thursday saying that until all the votes were counted, Ms. Abrams would not accept the official election results. Her opponent, Brian Kemp, who has distinguished himself by perhaps being the most egregious vote suppressor this election, resigned from his position as Secretary of State on Thursday morning and declared victory as governor-elect. Meanwhile, in Florida, Republican gubernatorial candidate Ron DeSantis' lead over Andrew Gillum has fallen dangerously close to the required recount margin. There are apparently still tens of thousands of ballots that had not yet been tallied. Both Florida and Georgia's gubernatorial races were characterized by contentious racist attacks on the two black candidates by the Trump-backed white candidates. Voters justifiably fear foul play in the vote counts. My guest is Cliff Albright, co-founder of Black Voters Matter. He's a radio host, writer, consultant, and social justice activist. Welcome to the program, Cliff.
Hi, Sonali. Thank you for having me.
So can you first give us a sense of any problems that took place in Georgia, especially on Election Day? We know the things that happened before. We covered them on our show with the placing on hold of a number of votes, the federal judges requiring Kemp to release certain voter registrations. But were there problems on voting day as people went in to try to vote?
Definitely, definitely. And we're just now learning. We're continuing to get more information about the nature of those problems. We know what we saw on Tuesday. We know that we saw excessively long lines. We know we saw polling places that usually may have had 30 machines, but this time only had 15 machines. We know that we saw polling places where machines were broken, not working properly. And so all of this caused very long lines, which, as you know, becomes another obstacle. It's another form of voter suppression because they hope that people get discouraged and turn away or just not come down to vote at all. So we know all of that was taking place. We're just now learning even more about why that was. We're discovering that there are warehouses in some of the state's most populous counties. We're talking Fulton County, DeKalb County, some of the largest counties in the state have hundreds, literally hundreds of machines that were just in storage, wrapped up, not used. This at the same time that we had all of these lines taking place and preventing people from being able to vote. And so we believe that this is not accidental. There's continuing efforts to get more information about how and why this took place. We really believe that there needs to be a full investigation after all this is said and done, or before all of this is said and done, because we need to know the truth about why all these things were taking place.
I understand that a number of students were told, Think Progress mentioned that and reported that a number of students, black students, say in Atlanta, Georgia State, that they were forced to cast provisional ballots and weren't explained whether their ballots would count. Presumably, these are folks who were registered to vote, and if so, why they had to cast provisional ballots is not clear. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, we heard the same complaints that we saw, and not just at Georgia State. We saw it with Morehouse students and Spelman students. I was at the Morehouse polling location.
And these are all historically black universities, so a large population of very well-educated, voting-age black students.
Exactly, exactly. Particularly Morehouse and Spelman. Georgia State isn't necessarily HBCU, sure, but it does, because of where it's at, have a significant black population. And so at each of these sites, you're talking about largely predominantly black students who are being impacted. And like, as you said, many don't even know why they were being told they had to cast provisional ballots, if it was a matter of that this wasn't their right polling place, or if there were issues with the voter ID. We know that Georgia is, of course, one of those voter ID states, which is part of the voter suppression that's been sweeping the entire country. And so there are thousands of provisional ballots. And this is a key issue. This is why the resignation of Kemp is important, because there are thousands, if not 100,000, provisional ballots that have yet to be counted. So right now, the battle is over getting those provisional ballots corrected and making sure that they get counted and making sure that we have the appropriate people, neutral people, who are in charge of doing this count. And not Kemp, since he's resigning as of, well, we don't want one of his flunkies, one of his political stooges, to just take his place to manage this process. Neither he nor anybody in his team associated with him should have any say in which of these ballots get counted.
And just to clarify, when you say resign, that's from his position as Secretary of State, which is the person who is the person in charge of overseeing elections. I want to play for you and our audience what Stacey Abrams said in the hours after voting was over and the speech where she basically said this was not yet a done deal.
That's what leadership requires at this moment. Our voices, say our voices.
Our voices.
It's about our votes, say our votes.
Our votes.
Votes remain to be counted.
Yes.
There are voices that are waiting to be heard.
Yes.
Across our state, folks are opening up the dreams of voters in absentee ballots, and we believe our chance for a stronger Georgia is just within reach.
And that is Stacey Abrams speaking just hours after polls closed on Tuesday night. And official counts said that Brian Kemp had more votes. Cliff, it seemed to me that Stacey Abrams didn't appear surprised that things were going to turn out the way they turned out, given everything that had happened in the lead up to election night. Are you and your colleagues not shocked about the possibility that there are problems with what happened?
Yeah, nothing that happens in Georgia or the South or anywhere in this country, for that matter, in regards to elections and voter suppression surprises me anymore. We were fully expecting all types of suppression to take place. We've already seen it, as you already mentioned. We've seen it throughout this election cycle, throughout Kemp's entire tenure as Secretary of State. So we knew that there were going to be these kinds of activities going on Election Day. I don't know if we could have predicted that there would have been hundreds of machines literally locked away, causing all of these long lines. But you know, again, there's nothing that surprises us when it comes to voter suppression. As Stacey has wisely said, this is about democracy and the machinations of democracy and whether or not we are really going to have a system where we have one person, one vote, where we have free and fair elections. And so there's a lot more at stake than even just this one election or just this one position. But none of this surprises us. It's consistent with what we've seen both out of Kemp as well as out of similar forces throughout this country, particularly since the gutting of the Voting Rights Act a few years ago, which still is not getting the attention it deserves.
Cliff, I understand that Kemp currently, as of the official count, has a lead over Abrams of 63,000 votes. As far as you know, do the uncounted votes, these are the provisional ballots and the results, I understand, overseas ballots that haven't been counted, are there more than 63,000 of those provisional and overseas ballots?
Yeah, so we've been working all day. So part of it is about absentee ballots. There are still maybe hundreds of thousands of absentee ballots. Again,
and absentee ballots are different from provisional ballots?
Exactly, exactly. So absentee ballots are the ballots that people, for the most part, mailed in because they knew that they couldn't be at their precinct on election day. And so they mailed them in, and there are still large numbers, again, possibly hundreds of thousands, that have not yet been counted. These numbers have been changing all day. And so,
potentially hundreds of thousands of uncounted votes, and the lead that Kemp has is 63,000.
Exactly. And that's before you even get to the provisional ballots, which again, could be at least 50, possibly as high as 100,000. To be clear, the Kemp Secretary of State's office is trying to say that there's only around 21,000 of those, but we don't yet know what the full numbers that is actually unverified, unsubstantiated, and it's part of his narrative of trying to say why it is that he's declaring himself to be the winner. But again, what's important about the recent court case is that he's resigning, and he's been instructed that he cannot have anything to do with the counting of these remaining absentee ballots or these provisional ballots.
Cliff, what is the rule in Georgia around either recounts or a runoff election? Different states have different rules. If the margin of votes between two candidates is, you know, falls below a certain percentage or certain number of votes, it automatically triggers a recount or a runoff. Can you explain what the situation is in Georgia?
Yeah, and so in terms of runoff, Georgia is one of those states where in this election, the winner, it's not a plurality. It's 50% plus one, right? And so he's got to have 50% of the votes plus one extra vote. Right now, or at least as of last check, he was at 50.3. It's estimated that if Stacey gets between 15 to 25,000 more votes, if that would bring Kemp underneath the 50 plus one threshold, which would then require a runoff election. If there is a runoff election, that would be four more weeks. It would take place December 4th, I believe is the date. And so so that's the first issue in terms of the runoff. There's also a recount provision, which I believe is 1%. I know Florida is 0.5%, but I believe in Georgia it's 1%. And we're also very close to that threshold. In fact, we might even be closer to that 1% threshold than we are to the recount threshold. But in either case, it's around 25,000 votes, which could make the difference between whether or not one of those two provisions kicks in.
What's at stake in this race with Stacey Abrams? It seems as though this feels like it's about more than Stacey Abrams as an individual.
Yeah, no, it's definitely about more than Stacey as an individual. I mean, as an individual, she's important. The symbolism of this Black woman, and again, potentially the first Black woman ever anywhere in this country to become elected governor, that symbolism is important. More important than that are the policies that she brings to the table, because it's not just about a Black woman. There's a lot of Black women that I wouldn't want to see be governor of Georgia, right? Or governor of any place. I wouldn't necessarily want to see Stacey Dash be governor of Georgia. And so it's not just about having a Black woman. It's about having this particular Black woman and the policies that she represents. It's about healthcare and expansion of Medicaid and rebuilding rural hospitals in this state, which have been decimated. It's about expansion of education, about creating an economy where everybody can really benefit, a just economy, right? And so it's also about the policies, but it's even beyond Georgia in this position. It's about more than that, right? It's really about the nature of what we believe is possible, what we believe is possible in this country, and what we believe is possible in the state and throughout the South. With Black Voters Matter, we always say the South is rising, right? And part of what we're talking about is that there's a new energy and a new understanding of what it takes to win in the South, however we define wins. And so when you look at people like Stacey, when you look at people like Andrew Gillum, when you look at mayors like Mayor Shokwe Antar Lumumba in Jackson, Mississippi, when you look at some of the local races that we've also seen where there were incredible victories on Tuesday, whether it's counties that have gotten their first Black sheriffs ever or the first Black DAs ever, there is something happening in the South. And there's a recognition that this traditional strategy of the only way that you can win here is to have a Democrat that's kind of like a Republican, right? That's trying to woo over these middle of the ground or these conservative voters. What these elections have shown, regardless of the final results with Stacey and with Andrew Gillum, what these elections have shown, and including Texas with Beto O'Rourke, what they've shown is that you can be unapologetically progressive, that you can speak to and motivate a base that is largely consisted of Black voters and brown voters, other voters of color and progressive whites, that you can speak to that and unapologetically be progressive and still win, or at the very least, come within a percentage point or half a percentage point of winning. And all of this is in spite of what we've seen, historic levels of voter suppression. Imagine what we would have seen from these campaigns without the voter suppression. Imagine what we would have seen from these campaigns if those 53,000 voter registration forms weren't being held onto by Brian Kemp, or if 1.5 million voters had not been purged from the voter rolls during Brian Kemp's tenure. So we're seeing this incredible historic movement taking place in spite of historic levels of voter suppression.
I want to turn to Florida briefly, where Andrew Gillum was running a race. You know, some similarities between what was taking place in Georgia. So he was running this race against Ron DeSantis, a Trump-backed candidate who used incredibly racist dog whistle language in referring to Gillum. And although Gillum conceded the race, that concession is not, I understand, an official action that just means that he gives away the race, and that now Ron DeSantis's lead, as some of these provisional ballots are being counted, is getting smaller and it could trigger an automatic recount?
Yeah, that's exactly the case. What we've seen is since election night that the lead that DeSantis had, which granted at the time seemed kind of daunting. But what we've seen is that as the absentee ballots have come in and as provisional ballots have been counted, that lead has narrowed and narrowed. And as you said, right now is very close to the point of triggering that automatic recount, which again in Florida is triggered at a margin of less than 0.5 of a percentage point. And once you get into the recount, then anything can happen, right? You can discover some of the irregularities, which, as I said, every hour we are literally learning more about irregularities here in Georgia, and I'm sure it's the same case in Florida. So once you get into that recount, you can look at some of these questions of where are you seeing strange numbers for some of these polling places? Where are there polling places where maybe the numbers of votes for DeSantis were, statistically speaking, just abnormal? And where are there places where there were some irregularities in regards to Black communities and polling places? So it's so important that we can at least get to that recount phase in Florida. And we believe that with every minute and every hour that it's getting closer and closer.
Now, did Gillum inspire the level of support in Florida that Abrams did in Georgia? Do you put him in that same category of inspiring progressive Black candidates that is part of this Southern rising?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Without a doubt. I mean, Andrew Gillum, look, we were in Florida with Black Voters Matter. We had our bus. Our bus has been in seven states, actually eight states now, because we went to Texas. We spent a good amount of time in Florida. We talked to voters, and people were very inspired by Andrew Gillum. But you can just see him and listen to him and know that. You can look at the responses that he gets, and you can look at the policies that he talks about, which again, unapologetically progressive, right? And so definitely he represents, and Stacey represents, a different strategy for how we mobilize the base of progressive voters and be able to get wins in states like Florida and Georgia and Texas and even Tennessee, right? When you contrast those campaigns to somebody who did the opposite strategy, right, of Bredesen in Tennessee, who did the traditional strategy, he lost by 11 points. At the very least, we know that Gillum and Stacey will either win these races or come historically close to winning these races. So definitely Andrew Gillum is definitely a part of that inspirational message bearer.
November 1st, you and your co-founder of Black Voters Matter published an op-ed in the New York Times called How to Turn a Person into a Voter. And you said that your approach was specific to Black Southerners, but that your model can work for anyone. How does one turn a person into a voter? What strategy did you and Latasha Brown, your co-founder, use to generate this enthusiasm for candidates like Stacey Abrams?
Yeah, I mean, it's a strategy that's based on our experiences in the South, but as we said, it's applicable anywhere in the country. For example, one of the things that we talk about is that we've got to use culture. We refer to ourselves as cultural organizers. Like everywhere we go, we believe in tapping into the culture of the community that we're going to, tapping into our wider and more historic culture. And so the importance of music, the importance of religion, the importance of food, the importance of relationships, right? We tap into that. So everywhere we go, we bring a boombox. We have music at just about all of our events.
And how do you respond? Do you ever get accused of just being like a Democratic Party, consultant?
No, I don't think so, because one of the things that we are very clear about in all of the communities that we go to is that we are not operatives of the Democratic Party. We are not talking about just supporting particular candidates or particular parties. In fact, one of the things we always say is it's about us. That's one of our slogans. It's on the back of our shirts and our sweatshirts. It's on every push card. We say it's not about these candidates or these parties. It's about us. Going back to Alabama and the Doug Jones election, the special election for U.S. Senate, we were very clear. We weren't going to go around and try to make Doug Jones look like he was the best thing since Martin Luther King. In fact, we did a radio ad that said exactly that. So it wasn't about him, but it was about us. It was about our issues, and it's about building power in our communities. Ultimately, that's what we're about. We don't even consider ourselves a voting or election organization. We always say we're about building power, and elections is one means towards doing that, but is by no way the only means. And so we support groups that engage a range of social justice issues or even social service issues. We support organizations that aren't just involved in issues like voting or issues like housing and gentrification or issues like healthcare, but even organizations that do youth services work or do environmental work. And so we support a range of organizations with the common theme that it's about us and it's about building power in our communities. Personally speaking, even when I lived in Alabama, I was part of starting a third party in a county in Alabama, specifically because we felt that the state party structure wasn't meeting our needs in that county and throughout the Black Belt of Alabama. And so I think most people, when they see us and hear us and learn more about us, they're not under any illusions that we are simply consultants for the Democratic Party.
Finally, Cliff, I'm assuming that you and Latasha and your fellow organizers at Black Voters Matter registered a lot of first-time voters during this election or before this election. Are you worried that what happened, what is happening with the Stacey Abrams race is going to confirm the cynicism that so many voters feel when they don't, so many eligible voters feel when they don't vote, because too many Americans don't vote thinking their vote just doesn't count. And when you have people like Brian Kemp, it confirms their fears and you know, there's their sense that the system is rigged against them.
Right. And, you know, that's why when we speak to communities and we speak with our local partners, we never try to say, and when you speak to voters that are frustrated, right, and who aren't regular voters, some might say low propensity voters, we never try to say that their frustrations are unjustified, right? We never try to say that their skepticism is unjustified. In fact, we often admit, and we said this in an op-ed piece that you alluded to, we often admit that we get frustrated too, and that we know that that this system wasn't built for us, and it's, there are all kinds of faults and failures in it. So we acknowledge that, we affirm that, and then we try to speak to our power, right? We try to speak to what we are able to do within the confines of this imperfect system, and we try to speak to other things besides just the top of the ticket races, so that even when we run into these obstacles with some of the high profile races, what we also talk about is, look, we also have county commission seats, and we also have sheriffs and DAs and all of these other things that we can have a little bit more control over. And so even when we don't win big elections, so like in Alabama in 2016, as Donald Trump won, Jefferson County still elected, I think it was 7 or 9 Black women to judge positions, right? So when we can have local victories like that, then even the folks who have the frustrations and are frustrated over what may have happened with the presidential race or the gubernatorial race, when they can see some victory and when they can see that somehow they participated in building power, right, then they can still believe in what the possibilities are. So we don't have to win everything. In fact, one of the things we have to say is we have to redefine what a win even is. Mm-hmm. But the way that we deal with that, those frustrations, is to, one, be honest with people about the nature of the political process, and two, to point out the many different ways that we can define a win.
Cliff, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll certainly keep our eye on the two races in Georgia and Florida. Thanks all for all you do.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Cliff Albright is co-founder of Black Voters Matter, radio host, writer, consultant, social justice activist. We've been discussing the Georgia and Florida gubernatorial races. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.